Based on hundreds of millions of real-world tests, the experts at Ookla Speedtest have spoken. T-Mobile is now the best mobile network in America. So you can keep up with all the MLB action from the ballpark to the backcountry because they've got the most advanced 5G, the most towers, and a signal that goes farther than ever. Oh, and did I mention the largest satellite-to-mobile network? They're way ahead making sure that the fans experience every pitch, play, and post-game moment. So whether you're streaming the game out and about, checking stats on the road, or experiencing ballpark perks with Magenta status, you're ready to stay connected wherever your fandom takes you. Head over to T-Mobile.com/network to switch to the best network. For baseball fans, it's better over here. Based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence, data first half 2025, compatible device and plan required for T-Satellite. See details at T-Mobile.com.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 322. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. And with me, as usual, is my 80 gray co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's your week going, bud?
It's good. Cannot complain. Had a good week so far. So we're coming up on the draft and All-Star weekend. So be fun. Looking forward to the draft for sure. Get some new prospects in the rankings, which is much needed after all the graduations. And really, yeah, the top 100 is bad right now. One of the worst I remember ever ranking, but at least we'll get some new blood in soon. So that'll be fun. And we'll be covering it over at Bleacher Report. So if you want to follow along and watch with us, we'll be on the Bleacher Report app covering the entire first round that night. So looking forward to that.
Yes, that's always fun doing that every year for Bleacher Report. And yeah, I literally was just thinking the same thing the other day. And I was looking at my rankings, doing some updates as I usually do, and just thinking like, yeah, we need some fresh blood here, and especially in this top 100. We look at all the people that graduated just from preseason to now. Like, I mean, we lost, to run down the top names, like, we lost what, Langford, Churio, Carter. We'll lose Woods soon enough. We lost Nolan Marte, Colt Keith. Let's see here. Jackson Merrill, Paul Skeens. Yeah, we've lost a lot of the top names here. And that's not even keep going down, Colton Cowser, et cetera. So you could definitely use that nice influx of talent. That's why I love the first update after the draft to see where the new guys slot in, how many are top 50, how many are top 100. And yeah, that's coming up next week. Got the Futures game coming up, All-Star break. What a fun events there. Home Run Derby, Pete Alonso looking to get his third Derby title belt. A lot of fun events coming up here, but we still got some time before all that happens, and we got a lot of interesting players to talk about today. Got some prospect debuts over the last week or so. We got some notable bigger names, veteran names that are performing pretty poorly right now, so look into the metrics and the profile, see what's going wrong, if we think they can turn it around, or are they cooked, we'll see, but intriguing mix of names. But before we get into that, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter. Chris is at RotoClegg. I am at EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please rate and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, thedynastydugout.com and toolshedfantasy.com, for more work from each of us, including all of our prospect and dynasty rankings. And of course, check out all the great things going on over at Rotoballer. Use that code TOOLSHED, get your 10% off at checkout on any premium package over at rotoballer.com. So start out with the debuts. We got five names here, starting with Brooks Lee. getting the call here. Royce Lewis going onto the IL again, unfortunately. But Brooksley off to a pretty good start here. First six games of his career. Got 11 hits in those six games. First home run already out of the way. 458, 462, 625. And this is after he only played 30 games this year in the minor leagues, dealt with an injury earlier in the season, but was hitting very well and overall. 350, 412, 585, and then 329, 394, 635 in 20 AAA games with seven home runs. Chris, I feel Brooksley is often a bit underrated a little bit. I was even guilty of that as well because he's one of those prospects that doesn't have the flashy profile. You know, he doesn't bring much speed. If maybe he's only going to give you a rogue steal here or there. So that's not a big part of his game. And he's not a big power guy. I think he's a solid bat, high floor, can hit for a good average, can get on base. And I think maybe he's going to be around, I think, a 20 home run guy, maybe high teens, low 20s, something like that. But probably not a guy that's hitting 30 at any point in his career. At least I can't see that happening right as of now. So I think he gets undervalued for that. But again, the bat is really solid. And I think he gets to be a sneaky good fantasy asset moving forward. We'll have to wait and see what happens when Royce Lewis does come back, because Brooksley has played mostly short and third in the minor leagues. And they got Correa and Lewis as he move over to second base. Maybe not sure yet how that works out. But I think the bat's pretty solid and he's underrated, like I mentioned. So what are your thoughts here on Mr. Brooksley?
Yeah, I think the people don't love him. It's just a, quote, boring profile. Sometimes boring works. Lee consistently makes a ton of contact. He puts the ball in play at high clips. And I know he put up some pretty good home run totals in AAA since coming back this year. And it really got some people excited. I think he hit one that was 449, but the EVs are still below average. He's not going to be. What I do think he's going to do is put so many balls in play that he is going to get to some home runs just from the fact that he's putting balls in play. He's going to get to lift and pull on occasion and hit the ball out of the park. And so I think that Lee profiles as the type that can hit 280. I think that that's a pretty reasonable expectation on a good year. Hit 280. He can give you 15 home runs and a handful of stolen bases. I don't think he's going to be a huge stolen base threat. What he's going to do is provide a really high floor for your fantasy team from a hit tool standpoint. And he's going to get on base, which is pretty important aspect. So I think that if you're looking for that kind of stabilizer in your lineup, he can be that. You're not going to sit here and expect him to come out and hit 25 homers and steal 10 bases or anything. But I do think that Lee is a really solid option where he can slot in a middle infield spot in your lineup and really give you a boost, especially in the batting average or OBP type departments. I'm pretty in on him. I tried to grab him everywhere I could in this weekend's fab run. And I just think he's going to be really solid moving forward, which you can't say for everybody because a lot of prospects do come up and struggle. But I think his floor and his field of hit gives him that higher floor where he should excel off the bat.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think if we did a prospect ranking like just on floor, he's probably top 25 or at least in that discussion. Because I think he's got one of the higher floors in all of baseball or the higher hit tools in all of baseball. And just a guy that's going to go out there and continue to impress people and maybe fly under expectations. I do hope he goes to second base. I think he'd be pretty intriguing at second base, especially. So we'll see how that works out whenever Lewis is back, and hopefully he can stay back next time. But I mean, we all know Lewis. But next player here, very different profile from Brooksley, going up to Cincinnati with Reese Hines, who started his career with a bang. Five extra base hits in his first two games. Already got two home runs, two doubles, and a triple. Got smoking balls all over the field. 102.6 average EV so far with his first six balls. Batted ball, with three barrels. This is a guy that has always shown huge raw power throughout the minor leagues, but also not the best approach at the plate. Lower walk rate, higher strikeout rate. But last year, did start turning it around a little bit. Hit 269 last year. Went 20-20 in 109 games for Double-A Chattanooga. This year, though, fell off a bit. Was still hitting home runs, 13 home runs in 77 games with 12 steals, but with a 216, 290, 698 slash line and 28 walks to 126 strikeouts. So get out the handy-dandy calculator here for that strikeout rate, because BRF does not show that. It's a 38.4% strikeout rate, nearly about 1.5 strikeouts per game. So that's still a big red flag with Hines. Yeah, he hits the ball super hard, but I don't know. I'm still, you know, Chris, I don't know. Do you think Hines kind of sticks as a starting major league outfielder? I'm still concerned that there's way too much swing and miss in the profile, and that's just going to limit him to maybe being a fourth outfielder or something like that long term. But what are your thoughts? Are you confident in Hines here?
No, I'm not. I think that he's going to go ballistic and get a ton of fab bids this weekend, and I wouldn't suggest it. I mean, it's easy to have FOMO with him, would come out and hit like he has so far. But we're looking at like worst in minor league contact rates for the last, you know, his entire career pretty much. So he has been known to go on streaks where he can mash, and we're seeing that right now. I mean, he obviously hits the cover off the ball. I think that's the most important thing to note, is that he can hit the ball with authority, has some of the best raw power in the game. But he also has a 20 grade hit tool, maybe 30 if we're generous, but he had a sub 60% contact rate in AAA this year. So that kind of tells you everything you need to know. That number's been pretty similar throughout his career. So yeah, Hines is a fun story. He obviously has gone nuclear so far, where he's been, you know, killing it. But I don't expect this to continue. I think he's going to be streaky. I think you're going to go through times where he is really good, and then there are times when he's striking out every other at bat and he's just draining your team. So yeah, I prefer not to roster those guys, honestly. I can't do it with the hit tool. I just don't think it's there at all.
Yeah, this is a guy that has a 35% career strikeout rate in the minor leagues. And how many games was it? It was, I just lost my spot. There it is. 322 games, 1,347 plate appearances, and you know, that many strikeouts. 470 strikeouts in 322 career games. I thought that might have been the most in the minor leagues over the last few seasons. It's not. He actually has the 31st most, but he's also not played a whole ton of games either. Griffin Conine actually has the most strikeouts in the last four seasons in the minor leagues with 612. That's just ridiculous. But yeah, Rhys Hines, fun player, hit the ball country mile. But yeah, I think now is a perfect time to sell high, capitalize if you can on these first couple of games. And maybe he continues his hot streak and you can really capitalize on that. But you don't really have a ton of faith moving forward. Next pitcher here, or next player here, we go a few pitchers with Yelber Diaz of the Arizona Diamondbacks, a guy that's been, you know, solid riser, I think, for the most part this season. Before he debuted, he moved up to, I think Chris and I both had him close to the top 150 range, not a top 100 guy, but definitely a guy that was, I think, probably ranked post 300, 400 range in a lot of rankings. Made his debut earlier this week and pitched pretty well. Gave up one earned in six innings with five strikeouts. So nice debut there for Yelber Diaz. We'll get in the start later this week on, I think, Saturday or Sunday, if I recall correctly. Chris, what are you seeing from Yelber Diaz? Is he a guy you're looking to invest in here moving forward?
Yeah, I think that he's pretty interesting. I think that he's made some notable changes to where I think I can believe in the profile a bit, where he's limiting his walks, which has always been the biggest downfall. He's walked so many batters, but this year that's come down. Even you look, and it was, yeah, 12.9% in AA in 54 innings, but there were improvements, you know, from early in the season. If we're looking at how things shook out, there was a stretch actually where he had three straight starts of five walks apiece, but he really got it back together, and he finished his last AAA start with 13 strikeouts over six innings, no hits and two walks. So obviously that's pretty impressive. And he stepped right in against a good Atlanta lineup that's swinging the bat much better, and he allowed just one earned over six innings with a walk and five strikeouts. So you look at Yelber Diaz, and I think there's a ton to like here. I think that this is the kind of arsenal that can excel as long as he throws strikes. Fastball's, you know, really solid, and he relies heavily on the fastball, so obviously important to note. But he's 96, 98. He can miss bats with it. He mixed in a slider, a curve. He'll throw a changeup on occasion. Did not throw it in his first MLB start. But yeah, I'm pretty big fan of what Diaz has done and how he's progressed this year. So I think that he is probably worth an add, no matter what kind of league you're in, just to see where it goes, especially if you are in need of an arm.
Yeah, no, I think he's a solid arm. I don't think he's going to be a stud or anything like that, or top of the rotation type of guy, but yeah, that could be like an SP3, SP4, something like that. He's got the three different pitches here. You mentioned the changeup sometimes as well, but really the four-seam slider and the curve. You know, slider and curve about 5-6 miles an hour apart. Slider's more like 83-84 range. Knuckle curve's in 77-78 range. So, you know, got three different velocity bands there, which is nice to see. And he can miss bats with both the breaking balls and even the fastball. Pretty good fastball as well. Averaged 96-1 in his debut there. Yeah, and we've seen Arizona do, you know, pretty well with pitcher development over the last few years. And I think he could be another one that they add into this rotation. And I think he could stick. I think he's definitely got the stuff to stick. Not the biggest dude in the world, but I think, again, the guy that's probably still a little undervalued and could have a pretty decent run here moving forward. Let's keep it right in the National League West with the Dodgers. Another debut there with Justin Robleski. Never thought he'd get some run this early in the season, given all the names they had to begin the season. A lot of injuries, a lot of poor performances. We'll get to one of those poor performing pitchers later on in the episode. But Robleski impressed as well in his debut. Gave up 4 earned and 5, so maybe doesn't look impressive at the surface. But a lot of people, you know, were impressed with his debut. This is a guy that's between AA and AAA this year in 15 starts, at a 3.23 ERA and a 1.08 whip. 79 strikeouts to 16 walks. So similar question here. How much do you want to invest in Robleski moving forward? And maybe which one of these two guys would you rather invest in between Diaz and Robleski?
Yeah, I think that Robleski's probably the safer option between the two. It's just obviously when you look at like a Diaz, it can be a volatile profile due to the walks, but when looking at Robleski, I think that it's a more complete arsenal with a little bit of a higher floor. Yeah, I think that if you want the safer option, that's the direction that I would go. I really like Robleski's arsenal. I have him as a top 100 prospect at this point, just given what he's done, how he's progressed with his arsenal. The fastball's ticked up last year and has held. It's, you know, 95, 97. He's got a solid cutter, slider, mixing a curve and change too. So he's got a 5-pitch mix and he can throw strikes. I think that's a big recipe for success for him. And he's just developed incredibly well in this Dodgers org. Yeah, you look at the first start and it's okay. Like, take it with a grain of salt, look at the larger body of work. And I think that he's a really good arm that I think is worth investing in. I obviously got him ranked higher than Diaz at this point. The upside, you know, may point towards Diaz, but Robleski's just got a high floor arm that I want on my roster.
Yeah, no, pretty different. So it really depends on, yeah, do you want the safer guy? Do you want the guy with a little more upside? I don't have any strong feelings either way. I think they're both going to be pretty solid and maybe similar value moving forward, though they might take different paths and have different profiles to get there. But yeah, I think both could be maybe back in top 100 starters for fantasy purposes. So I'm not like rushing out to get either of these two guys, but yeah, I think they're both pretty solid arms for sure. Last arm here, Hunter Biggie. Can't you see? We had to figure out how his name was pronounced because, you know, it's B-I-G-E, so it could be Big, could drop the E, could be Bijay if you want to be fancy with it, or Biggie, and we ended up figuring out it is Biggie. Coming up with into the Cubs bullpen here, a bullpen that has been really depleted by poor performance, by injury. They had some names, but none of them have pitched up to the level that people thought they could pitch to this year. So Biggie could actually get some run here, maybe even pitch in some high-leverage situations sooner rather than later. A guy that was pitching very well in the upper minors in 11 AAA appearances for Iowa, 11 and two-thirds innings, 0.77 ERA, 19 strikeouts to just 6 walks. Chris, do you think that Biggie can, like I said, pitch in high leverage situations and maybe be a guy that starts factoring into the saves holds mix pretty soon here?
Yeah, he certainly looks that part where, you know, he's got big stuff. Yeah, there's a lot of rave reviews about him And yeah, obviously he stepped right in and looked the part. And you know, the Cubs are in an interesting spot where they could use a steady big time arm in the back of that bullpen. And I think that he could absolutely fit that. He's going to overpower people with a fastball. We saw him touch triple digits. Obviously that was pretty significant. He'll mix in a slider curve, which you know, I think is pretty encouraging. He's got enough depth in the arsenal where I like the profile. And I think that, yeah, I think this is someone that, while it's not like a rush to add, I think you have to monitor what he's doing, because all of a sudden he could be in a role where, man, you really want to roster this guy. So yeah, Hunter Biggie is a fun arm and one that I think certainly going to pop on more radars, especially throwing triple digits like we saw. Obviously that's going to get a lot of highlight reels and generate a lot of buzz. So I'm in.
Yeah. Right now, Hector Neris has been closing on games for them, but he's been pretty inconsistent throughout his career. Yeah, Tyson Miller, Luke Little, Porter Hodge, Mark Leiter. There's not any guy that you're like, oh yeah, there's a bunch of these guys are definitely going to be stay in front of him on the pecking order, so to speak. And they have a few others that are hurt. Albert Alzale is on the IL right now. So is Julian Merriweather. So it's not, you know, Yancy Almonte as well, who's out for the year. Yeah, it's pretty slim pickings there. So I can see him definitely whittling his way up the pecking order and maybe getting into some high leverage situations. So definitely a guy the deeper leagues, I take a flyer on him for sure. Real quick though, Chris, before we go on to some of the major league veterans guys that we're going to talk about here, back to Robleski real quick. Did you know that he's from Georgia, in Hickory Flat, Georgia? You know where that is?
I don't know where that is.
I wasn't sure if that was like somewhere near you up on the South Carolina border or something.
It could be like near North Carolina.
I know. That's what it sounded like, a northern, northwestern or northeastern, Georgia town name, Hickory Flat.
Yeah, because I'm pretty close to the Georgia, North Carolina border up there. Hickory Flat is a small suburb north of Atlanta, actually. And not where I thought it was, but yeah, looks like it's probably an hour north of Atlanta, if I had to guess, near north of Woodstock, Georgia, Canton, Georgia. Yeah, interesting. But yeah, Hickory Flat certainly sounds like it would be like near the North Carolina border mountain area, but no, surprisingly.
Not like terribly far away, though. No. But yeah, I saw that on his baseball reference page, and I meant to bring it up when we were talking about him, but I figured before we move on to the next segment here, before X out of this tab, that's, I want to bring that up. He was a 11th rounder, went to Oklahoma State, was also drafted 36th round by Seattle out of Sequoia High School in Hickory Flat. So another Georgia kid there. But let's go over to some of the major league struggling veterans here. Oh, well, this guy, he's not a rookie, but I don't know if I call him a veteran, though. But we're starting with Anthony Volpe, still only 23 years old, but he's a guy that's really struggling. He was pretty hot to start the year. He was hitting like around 300, but lately, last month or so, he's really fallen off pretty hard. See, over the last 29 games, 177, 202, 239 slash line, 4 walks to 32 strikeouts. And he has not hit a home run since May 16th. So we are coming up on 2 full months since the last Volpe home run. You know, I'm not saying I'm out on Volpe, but this is a guy that has not hit above 51 at any level above single A. He had that 1 year in 2021 when he was at low A and high A for that year. And he hit, I think it was 294 for the entire year, and hit pretty high for both levels. Then the average, you started seeing it go down, double A, triple A, majors, 209 last year. And obviously, he's better than a 209 hitter. You look at the metrics, and they didn't line up with a 209 hitter. Zone contact, right around average. Overall contact, actually a tick above league average. But I think he's just hitting the ball at not the ideal angles. His quality of contact's taking a hit. It's not terrible, but it's below average right now. His pull rate has actually dropped 20%, 46.7% last year, 26.6% this year. He's hitting too many ground balls as well. Ground ball rate's up 10%. So I think it's a factor. He's still hitting the ball, making plenty of contact, and quality of contact is, again, not great, but not terrible either. But he's just not hitting it where he probably should be hitting it. I don't know. I think he's still a top 100 guy. He's got plenty of speed to be a 25 or so steal guy. Still think he's going to be 15, 18 home runs more often than not. But I don't know if you ever see 21 plus again, like he did last year, which maybe might sound weird to say from a rookie that won't be adding any power. I just don't see him being like a 25, 30 home run guy. Maybe he can get up in the low 20s again, but I don't know. If he's 250, which I think he's 50-ish hitter, I think that's about where he probably is, with 15 to 18 home runs more often than not and 20 to 25 steals. He's still top 100, but I think some people had him top 25. I forget who it was. Someone was talking about him in the same breath as like Gunner and Bobby Witt, which I never understood. He's not that point. Even when he was hot earlier in the year, I didn't have him anywhere near their level. So I don't know what I would do with Volpe though, Chris. Like, obviously not an ideal time to sell him, but maybe let him get hot for a few weeks, then try to sell. I don't know. How would you handle Volpe right now if you had him?
At the end of the day, like, his profile's weird for one. It's improved contact, which obviously is important because there were some struggles with contact last year. You look in the overall contact rate is up by about 5 percentage points and the zone contact rate is up for 2 percentage points. And I think that's pretty notable. But at the same time, the ground ball rate has jumped 10 percentage points. So that's something to note. You mentioned the pull rate's down 20%. That's absurd and really bad. And he doesn't hit the ball in the air. Like, the line drive rate's identical. Fly ball rate is way down. So, you know, he's just not going to be able to get to home runs because he doesn't lift and pull the ball. He's not hitting the ball hard at all either. The average exit velocity's dropped over a mile an hour. The hard hit rate's down 6 percentage points. It's really weird. I'm not surprised to see the barrel rate go down given the amount of ground balls and the fact that he's not getting to healthy pulled good batted balls at all. Do I think that he's underperforming? Yeah, probably. But again, like, last year was great. He hit 21 homers, stole 24 bases, but he had a 666 OPS, really bad luck there. And then 680 this year, two straight years with pretty poor OPS. The OBP for his career is 292, which isn't good either. He obviously provides good value in the field and with his legs, so that helps. But right now, it just doesn't look pretty at all. I'm actually finalizing my dynasty rankings. I have him outside the top 100 because I don't see it right now. Could that change? Yeah, because early in the year, he was really good, and I thought he had made a tangible change. I really did. But so far, man, it's pretty ugly. And yeah, even the expected WOBA on contact's not good. He's well below MLB average there. His ex-WOBA, WOBA, those are pretty bad. I don't know. I think you're stuck with him if you roster him. If you believe in him, you can probably go and acquire him. But I don't think you can trade him and get what you should get, at least.
Yeah, not right now, that's for sure. And I think you could say the same thing about this next guy, another American League East shortstop here, Bo Bichette. I mean, we talked to Bo Bichette, Chris, maybe a month and a half ago, something like that. I mean, back in like late May, early June, I can't remember when. And we're talking about, all right, he's pretty bad right now. Metrics still look pretty solid. He can turn it around. Another several weeks have passed, and it's the exact same story with Bo Bichette, because right now, in 326 plate appearances, he's slashing 223, 276, 322. That's a 598 OPS, so even lower than Volpe's this year. Four home runs, five steals. But again, you look at the underlying metrics. Contact rates are even better than last year. At least the zone is up to 89.7. Overall, he's still right in that 79% range. He's been really 77 to 79% basically every year of his career. Zone has been 85 to 90% every year of his career. Chase rate is right in line. It's a little high, but he's always been in the mid to upper 30s of the chase rate. Maybe that's finally starting to get him now. But the two biggest things I've noticed here is, again, and the quality of contact is about the same as well, outside of the barrel rate dropping from 9.6 to 4.5. EV is only half a mile an hour lower. Hard hit rate is only 1% lower. But the big difference is, at least two metrics I saw, is the BABIP. He's been a guy that was 340, 350, 360 BABIPs for every year of his career. 355 last year, 265 this year. And then the home run to fly ball rate He was in the 15 to 18% most years, 16.5% last year. That's been cut by third down to 5.3%. So I still, looking at the profile, my brain wants to say, yeah, buy low, Bo will bounce back. But my brain said that same thing back in May and in June. Now we're in nearly mid-July. Great, Chris. Should we, you think we should still look to buy low on Bo Bichette? Again, the brain says yes, but the heart says no.
And the metrics say no too. So I don't know if Bichette is a top 100 dynasty asset anymore either. I mean, there's name value, sure, but I'm pretty out at this point. It's just a steady decline over the last, 3 years. Peak year was 21 at this point. Maybe it was even before that. I'm looking back. Yeah, 2021 was the big year. And since then, it's gone downhill. And of course, the crutch the last 2 years, even with the decline, has been batting average. He still gave you a pretty high floor with batting average. But this year, it's surprisingly not there, even though his zone contact rate's up 3%. And the overall contact rate's right in line with last year. So that's obviously pretty notable. But the quality of contact has gone down so much that these aren't turning into hits, which obviously isn't good. It's a similar thing where, like Volpe, Bo can't pull the ball. 27% pull rate was 26% last year. For reference, MLB average is 37, and Bo's career is 28. So he doesn't pull the ball. He hits the ball on the ground way more than league average. He has zero fly balls, which is interesting. It's an 18% fly ball rate, which is not good at all. So you look at all these things, and you also see average EV is tanked. 2021 and 2022 was 91.4, 91.9. Last year, 90.2. This year, 89.6. And while it's okay, that's still above league average, why is it declining so hard? In the process, his barrel rate has been cut in half from what it was in previous seasons. That's obviously notable. I think the most notable thing is a sweet spot percentage is pretty poor at 31%. So that's a major issue in itself. And I think, like you said, the lack of, or the amount of chase is really an issue here. But while Bo's XBA is higher, he's got 261 XBA. I don't put a lot of stock into that. His WOBA is 265, which is bottom 8% of the league. His ex-WOBA on contact is 350, which is well below average. I don't know. Maybe he needs a change of scenery, and maybe if he does get traded, things could improve. But right now, I don't know. I'm not really buying personally. And maybe they don't sell because you can't really sell when his value's tanked this much.
Yeah. I want to see what they do at the deadline. They have some name value pieces for sure. What do they get for them? I don't know. It's gone pretty poorly for Toronto this year. I think they're a team people thought would make the playoffs or at least be in contention. And here they are last in the American League East and floundering right now, especially offensively for sure. Who would you rather, real quick, who would you rather buy low on, Volpe or Bo, if you had to?
Probably Volpe, just because he's got speed, power and speed. At least he can provide in somewhere. I don't know. I don't love either. At least I think that Volpe, we know where the concerns are. He struggles with contact. That's improved. And yeah, I think the power, at least he showed it last year, and the speed, really neither, but I guess Volpe.
Yeah, I think I'd lean Volpe too. He's younger. I mean, at least he's still stealing a good amount of bags. Bo is not. Bo's not really giving you anything right now. At least Volpe gives you a little bit of speed, even when he is struggling. But yeah, not going overly well for these two ALE shortstops right now. Moving over to National League Central with Ke'Bryan Hayes, a guy that I think I'm done defending at this point. It's funny. I was never overly high on Hayes as a prospect several years ago, but I became a Hayes defender the last 2 years. But again, I'm done doing so. This year, slashing 232, 290, 300, and 276 plate appearances, 3 home runs, 8 steals. just a guy in his quality of contact. And a lot of things are eroding here, skill-wise, for Hayes. We've got quality of contact has gone down a good amount this year, 5% hard hit rates drop. EVs drop from 92.2 to 88.4. Barrel rate from 7.4 to 2.5. Still hitting too many ground balls, back up over 50%. And this is a guy that is power's eroding, and so is his speed as well. He was a guy that was stealing some bags, and he still has 8 steals this year. But you look at, and it's a pretty stark drop-off for just a 4-year period. In his rookie year back in 2020, sprint speed was 28 feet per second, and his home the first time was 4.4 or 4.41, maybe exact. Now it's down to 26.4% feet per second for sprint speed, and 4.6 on his home the first time. It's been trending the wrong way, and he's still only 27. So it's weird to see that big of a drop-off there. Who knows how much speed he provides moving forward, and this is a guy that just doesn't hit the ball in ideal angles, and even the quality of contact's gone down as well. So, I mean, contact is still there, though, Chris. Like, his zone contact rate, I believe it was over 90%. Yes, 92% zone, 83 or 82% overall. So that's still really good, but the rest of the profile, just not that impressive.
It's just, it's bad. Cabrian Hayes is the reason that you should not care about spring training stats at all.
Yep.
Because he was like the spring training MVP, if there was one. He was hitting the ball hard. He was hitting home runs. Like, it looked like he was ready to break out. He hit 412, looked back in spring training with 3 homers and 53 plate appearances. But obviously none of that stuck. Why? Because he hits the ball on the ground way too much. He can't pull the ball at all. That's obviously a fatal flaw. Talked about a couple of these guys, low pull percentage. His pull percentage is 20%. That's
not good.
Significantly lower than Volpe and Bo. His ground ball rate's 51%. So those are just fatal flaws in the profile. And then when you don't hit the ball hard on top of that, he's got one of the worst barrel rates in the league right now. His average EV has dropped 4 miles an hour. Like, that's pretty crazy. The launch angle's terrible. It's really bad. Luckily, Hayes provides some value with his glove, and he's on the Pirates because, yeah, I really think that if he's on a good team, he's probably not playing every day. So
yeah,
you're right. The contact's good, but there's nothing else to like here other than his glove right now. So I don't see anybody taking his spot anytime soon, but I also don't see him providing much of anything for you for fantasy purposes.
Yeah, it just shows that you can have great contact rates, and that doesn't, you know, obviously it's better to have higher rates than lower rates, but doesn't always translate to success overall. Because, like with Hayes, perfect example, when you're not hitting it in the right spots and you're not that great of a runner, it's going to limit you. If you're hitting ground balls at second base here, it's not going to do you a ton of good here. And he's hitting 197 on fastballs after hitting 302 last year on fastballs. But look at the 5 names to similar batters to Cabrian Hayes based off his batted ball profile. Doesn't really give you a lot of confidence or inspiration. The 5 names are Cal Mitchell, Randall Grichuk, Vimael Machin, Miguel Amaya, and Cesar Hernandez. Mm. Not really the most fearsome 5-some there. To put it nicely. But yeah, I've been a Hayes defender, but I'm done defending Cabrian Hayes. Next guy here, Andres Jimenez with the Cleveland Guardians. This year, slashing 252, 305, 342, 5 home runs, and 14 steals. But again, not the profile. He's just gotten a little bit worse every year. 2022 almost went 2020. And even last year, went 15-30. But the power has just dropped off pretty significantly over the last couple of years. Not that he had a ton of power to begin with, but he had 37.8% hard hit rate in 2022, but last 2 years, 27% and 28.6%. Doesn't walk a lot either. Ground ball rates ticked up this year. A guy that I've never been super high on in general. Real life player, and he's got a good amount of value because he's a great defender. He can run. That defense up the middle obviously brings a lot of value to the Guardians, but for fantasy, he's still fantasy viable, but I don't know. He's not someone that I'd want to really invest in right now. I think there's a lot of other more intriguing middle infielders that I'd try to get, maybe some of the younger guys that are maybe on the way up. But yeah, I have no desire to roster Jimenez right now. What about you, Chris?
Yeah, sorry if you just heard fireworks. For some reason, it's checks my notes July 10th, and people were shooting fireworks outside my house right now. But back to Andrés Giménez, it's not good.
Not a lot of fireworks in that profile.
No, not at all. It wasn't great last year, like from a underlying data standpoint. It was really bad, actually. But yet, he made it work because he provided value with his legs, which he's still doing this year, I'll say. And he somehow got to 15 home runs despite having one of the worst average EVs in the league and a 5% barrel rate, which was really bad. This year, it's just falling apart even more, which is, it's actually similar to last year, I guess, overall, if you look under the hood. Contact rates are, he doesn't strike out because he's pretty aggressive, honestly. He's swinging a lot. So he puts the balls in play pretty early in counts. Even though he doesn't swing a lot on the first pitch, like his overall swing rate's rather high. He is going to put the ball in play despite like slightly above league average contact rates. He's a heavy chaser. Like he'll swing at anything, like I mentioned. But the quality of contact is just not there at all. Another ground ball issue. If you hadn't seen the common theme of what we're talking about here, it's a lot of these guys struggling, cannot lift the ball at all. It's too many ground balls where they can't pull it and do any damage. But yeah, with Jimenez, I don't see a lot to like. He's another one. Luckily, he provides value with his glove because I don't think that he would be starting. This is a team that has more middle infielders than most teams have players. This system is chock full of a million middle infielders that could come up and take Jimenez's spot if somebody steps up. And guess what? I'm not saying right now it's happening, but Angel Martinez is balling out right now. They've got guys. I don't want to go out and get Jimenez, but I think that his value is pretty shot.
Yeah. That's the Cleveland way. They draft a lot of these good athletes, good defensive middle infielders. Hey, if we can move them off the third base, corner outfield, center field, that's their way. And Jose Tena, they got Rocio. Obviously, he hasn't been really that great, but yeah, they have some names. Angel Martinez, like you mentioned, Juan Brito, he plays second base as well. So yeah, I kind of wonder what they do with Jimenez moving forward here. And you know, they'll probably keep him, I'm sure, because of that defensive value, and he's still a good runner as well. But yeah, for fantasy, I'm just not really that intrigued right now. Let's move over to a few pitchers here, starting with Bobby Miller, who has just been getting lit up since returning from the IL. 7 starts, has got an 8.07 ERA and was just optioned down to AAA Oklahoma City. Walk rate up over doubled this year, 13.5%. K rates dropped down to 20.3%. And I saw a tweet from Saras, I'll read it now. This was on, I think, Tuesday night. He said, and obviously one of the best baseball minds, especially on the pitching side in the game period, he says, quote, "I don't know why Bobby Miller hasn't been better. It bothers me. He's got velo even now as it's down. Pitches have good shapes. He isn't a two-pitch guy. The command is maybe not elite, but it's not below average. He's got pitches that fit each handedness. I still think he'll be good." And I really tend to agree with you. And you look at right now, Miller in the past was a good, decent command guy. Right now, it just hasn't really been there. Let's look at some of the heat maps on his pitches. Changeups leaving over the heart too much. Both breaking balls have been, especially the slider, been really inconsistent. The fastball hasn't been. It's been all over the zone, really. So I think he's still checking out the rust here. And I thought he would. That's why I was like, oh, just give him some time. He'll get his legs underneath him. And this hasn't been the case. And the metrics just don't look good right now, Chris. No matter how you slice it, they don't look good. Obviously, the velo still 97.5. It was down from 99 last year. Maybe he's still not 100%. Maybe something's still bothering him. Maybe it's a mental thing. I don't know. Hard to say, and I don't want to speculate, but I'm still buying low on Bobby Miller. I still very much believe in the stuff. I think this is a guy that many of people, myself included, were saying, all right, this guy could be like a back-end ace for fantasy, like a top 10 to 15 SP overall for fantasy. And I still think that pitcher is in there. I'm not sure exactly what's going on right now and when he'll get back to form. So maybe for this year, you know, maybe he won't be providing a ton of value. And who knows how long they keep him down in AAA. But long-term, 2025 and beyond, I'm still very much in Bobby Miller. So I think he's one of the biggest buys right now in Dynasty. But do you share my optimism, Chris?
Yeah, I do. I think that it's probably prime time to go out and buy Bobby Miller in a Dynasty league, because I tend to agree. I think the stuff is still there. I partially wonder if he's just struggling to find, something. Like, mechanics can be funky at times. Yeah. And, I'm wondering if something's just slightly off. Obviously, he missed time with injury earlier in the year, right shoulder inflammation. That's scary stuff in of itself. Like, you don't want that. I think that maybe it's just something slightly off. And I think you go down, he works on some things. And I think it's a good opportunity too, like, not a high pressure environment. He's playing for a World Series contending team. So obviously, get him in the minors. Shoot, maybe even put him on the dev list and just work out some things. Obviously, I think he can work him out in AAA. Probably doesn't need to go spend time on the dev list or anything like that. But you put him in an environment where it's controlled and he can go back and get his confidence back. I think that's a big thing too, where it's just really, a lot of it is confidence, and he's struggled. So yeah, I think he needs to get the confidence back and probably find whatever it is that is slightly off that's causing the issues. But again, I think you look at Bobby Miller and the stuff is really good. I think he bounces back and it'll be fine, because his issues so far this year have been a lot of issues with secondaries, and his curve and slider have got hit really hard, and the whiff rates on both are down substantially from last year. I think he figures it out. I think he'll be okay. If somebody is panicking that rosters him right now in your Dynasty League, go out and get him. Even if it's a slower burn, even if he doesn't provide much this year, he's 25. He's going to be fine long-term. So I'm absolutely on board with buying Bobby Miller.
Yeah, and just to give people out there a little more confidence, the similar pitchers to Bobby Miller based on velo and movement kind of backs up what Eno was saying. The five names they have are Jared Jones, Gerrit Cole, Luis Severino, Jacob deGrom, and Hunter Green. It's a pretty good list to be on right there. So, yeah, definitely looking to buy low on Bobby Miller right now wherever I can. Maybe not so much on this guy. This guy, actually, I had a few shares of this year. So I was buying the dip. And it was looking good for Carlos Rodon through the first, 2.5 months of the season, outside of was one start in early May when he gave up 6 earned runs to Baltimore. Outside of that, he did not allow more than 3 earned runs in any other start. That is until recently, where he's been very poor. Last 4 starts, 7 earned. Excuse me, last 5 starts, even 5 earned and 5. 7 earned and 3 2/3, 8 earned and 5, 3 earned and 5 1/3. That was his best one out of this last 5 starts. And then 4 earned in 4 innings yesterday on Tuesday against Tampa Bay. And he hasn't really faced great offenses. If that first outing was against Boston, Boston's been, I think, a top 10-ish offense this year. And then he faced your Atlanta Braves, who still have a decent offense, but not what it was last year. And then he faced Toronto, who's been scuffling offensively most of the year. Cincinnati, who was depleted. And Tampa Bay hasn't been the greatest offense. Not terrible, but he hasn't been facing juggernaut offenses over the last several weeks here. But he's just been really bad. Chris, you see any hope for a turnaround here? You think this maybe just a rough patch for Rodon? What are your thoughts when you look at the profile?
I think that he's just... he might be cooked, honestly. I wrote him up as a sell, pretty early on this year. And he went on a hot run, and I was questioning myself a little bit. You looked at him like, oh, man, was that a mistake? I think, I don't remember exactly when I wrote him in the sell column, but I'm guessing early May, because he went on a little run there where he was looking really good. It was 6 innings for pretty much every start after his first one in May. And he was striking guys out, not allowing a ton of runs. And then it just all just fell apart. And it doesn't look great right now. He's, like you mentioned, lit up by the Braves, lit up by the Blue Jays, hit pretty hard by the Reds. The Rays beat him up last time out. It's trending in the wrong direction pretty quickly. In June, it was a 7.76 ERA. Two starts in July, 6.75. So if you can get out from under him, I might. The surface numbers still look okay, so maybe you can sell the innings also. He's thrown 103 so far. Last year's a 64, and he's been someone that struggled at times to stay healthy. He has eclipsed. He's gone over 132. He did 132 in 2021. He's gone over that number just once since 2017. So I'm not confident he stays healthy either, to be honest with you. So if you can cash out, probably would, but it's right now, I'm not sure what you get for him.
You maybe find the Yankee, you know, fan in your league if there is one. I don't know. I just he's getting hit too hard. Obviously, the durability, as you mentioned, has been an issue. He can still miss bats. I give him that. He's always been a decent bat misser, so he can still give you a little bit of value there. And he's 31. I don't know. I'm not saying he's done being fantasy valuable, but yeah, I think he's just a hard one to invest in right now. And I don't know if I'd want to buy low. I think it really all depends on the price, obviously. But if the value is dipped to where he's almost free, like, all I have to do is let me give up a prospect outside my top 100. Maybe. I can maybe get behind that. But outside of that, I'm not running out to send out some buy low offers or start that conversation with whoever rosters him right now. That's for sure. Next name here, keep it in the American League East. Go over to from the Yankees to the Red Sox with Breon Bello, who has just had a really weird season. And every year we wait for Bello to take that next step, and he just hasn't taken that next step so far. This year he's been, you know, not terrible, but he's got a 5.40 ERA and a 1.49 WHIP. He does have the best strikeout rate of his career, but still only 22.1%, which is basically right league average on the nose, and then 8.6% walk rate, which is also right on league average. There, XERA is about a run lower, 445. This guy that just has not missed a ton of bats this year, and never really has. I'm starting to question, can he ever be more than just like a league average K-rate guy? His whiff rate's 26%, which is fine, but he's waiting for him to take that next step. That just has not happened. Even last start, I was like, all right, he was missing a ton of bats. He had 15 whiffs through three innings, ended up with 11 strikeouts, but then he allowed five runs in the outing as well. So it's like always something that's holding him back. He starts missing more bats, and he starts giving up more runs. He can never just get both of those right at the same time. I still like Bello. I watch him, Red Sox fan, watch all of his starts. Saw him a ton in the minor leagues as well. He's ditched the four-seamer this year, gone strictly sinker, changeup, slider. Both changeup and slider having a whiff rate in 35-36% range, so that's gotten better. Now, last year it was really just the changeup as a bigger whiff rate offering for him. So there's been some gains this year, but then hitters are hitting 357 off the sinker. So I don't know, Chris, are you still holding out hope that there's another level to be unlocked here for Bello? He's still only, 25 years old? So he's still young, but he's kind of like the one that they have not, the Andrew Bailey and company, and then he worked with Houck. He took the next step. Pavetta's been great. Carter Crawford's been great. Bayo is the one where I was really hoping they'd find that with him. They just haven't done that yet.
The biggest issue is that his sinker's terrible. And it's not terrible in the sense of a movement profile. It's his location's horrifically bad. He's throwing a sinker up in the zone, and it's dropping to the middle of the zone. Guys aren't going to swing under that. It's going to get obliterated, and it has. He's got a 357 batting average against on that pitch. It's getting hit super hard, 521 slug against. Not whiffing batters, obviously, but also he's struggling to keep it on the ground, which you have to with a sinker. You have to throw it down to be able to excel. It is interesting. Obviously, he did completely ditch the four-seam, but it's come back as of recent, which I think is interesting. Not much. I'll say he hasn't thrown it a ton, but he has actually brought it back a little bit down the stretch here these last few starts. But I think a lot of it has to do with just the sinker location being pretty poor. The changeup's good. The slider's good. Those pitches both have 35% whiff rates or better. So that's obviously pretty notable there when you're looking at that. But at the end of the day, I don't really know what exactly they're doing with him. Like you said, a lot of the other guys have excelled, but Pay was kind of going the opposite way. I look at the profile and I think, okay, I still believe there's potential for him to step back and become something solid. And he's never going to be an ace. That's not the profile we're looking at. But Bayo has the stuff to be a solid mid-rotation type starting pitcher. And right now he's pitching like somebody you don't even want on a fantasy team. So we're going to have to see a change here. I'm watching the pitch mix pretty closely, actually, because it's the four-seam coming back is interesting. Last two starts, he's thrown it. I'm not sure if that's a good or bad thing. Honestly, the four-seam wasn't great last year. But right now, it's just all over the board. He's not finding the groove, and his location has not been good at all. So I think that's really the big thing. You look and, okay, the walk rate's not high, but it doesn't matter because he's not locating well. He's missing over the middle, and he's getting haunted by it. Yeah, I could see a reason to, potentially try to buy him, but I'm not, like, super excited to do, honestly.
Yeah, that's where I am, too. Again, I like Bayo. I think there's still the potential there. I'm just waiting for that potential to be translated into more success for fantasy. And yeah, I was kind of looking while you were talking, looking at the heat maps on the sinker, 3 years of his career so far, and it's just slowly, like the dark red middle is slowly moving up. It was like his rookie year, 2022, it was really down and in to righties. It was in that lower quadrant. Last year, slightly more in and over and up, and then this year it's like slowly moving like up and right towards the middle of that zone, at the point where, like you mentioned, the heart of the red this year is more over the middle of the plate. So command's has slowly gotten worse on that pitch, and yeah, you leave a sinker over the heart of the plate. That's why, outside of the 1 year for Porcello, that was my issue I always had with Rick Porcello. I'm like, dude, get the sinker down, dude. Like, you know, don't throw it over the middle of the plate. That's gonna go run right into the barrel of a lot of hitters. I don't know. Even if he does get right, I think, what's the upside here? If he does get right, like Jose Berríos, guy can give you like a mid-3 ERA and maybe like a 24% K rate or something like that. I think that's what we're looking at with him. I don't think he's ever going to be 26, 27 or higher percent K rate guy, but maybe he can get the Jose Berríos levels. That's what I'm hoping for. It's a lot of some hope, but I'm getting tired of waiting on it. Let's say that. But hey, let's end the show on a positive note here, Chris. I think we've talked a lot of guys that have things go wrong, so let's just end the show positively and keep it again in the American League East. Just go talk some Taj Bradley, a guy that's been really firing on all cylinders here. 11 starts this year, 3.23 ERA and a 30.6% strikeout rate. A lot of red in the profile on Savant. He's missing bats, over 30% whiff rate on the splitter, cutter, and curveball. All three of those also have a batting average against of .222 or less. You know, I've been trying to get Bradley everywhere I can. And yet, the one knock, he gives up a little too much hard contact for my liking. Barrel rate 13%, EV 91.6, hard hit rate 42.8. So that's like the one little kind of bugaboo nitpick I have with Taj Bradley. But we've seen the stuff is really good. The bat missing ability is there. Even last year, when he had a 5.59 ERA as a rookie, he still had a 19.5% K minus BB rate. This year, it's about 22%. And that's one of the better marks. I think it's a top 10 mark in all of baseball right now. So, yeah, I'm definitely buying Bradley. And hopefully he can do a better job limiting the hard contact. But the arrow on Bradley is definitely pointing up right now.
Yeah, he looks the part for sure. He has been pitching extremely well. And I think it's pretty exciting what we've seen out of him. I think he's taking a step forward right now to blossoming to a high-end starting pitcher. And it was definitely a buy opportunity after last year. He had a pretty rough year in 2023, 5.59 ERA over 104 innings, but he had shown some positives. And this year, it just looks all the better. He's getting hit hard, which is a little bit of the worry here that there could be some regression coming. But man, you can't argue with the swing and miss stuff. He's striking guys out left and right. He has consistently posted good results, and he's not looking back. Like, since he got blown up by the Red Sox in May, 7 innings, 5 earned, but he struck out 10 in that start. he's just been nails since. And he has only one of those starts since then has been more than one earned run, which is telling of how good he's been. He's had multiple 11 strikeout outings there. In the month of June, he had 43 strikeouts and 32 innings with a 3.62 ERA. And he came out in his last start and has looked really good again against the Rangers this time. I think I'm buying into Bradley for sure, because you look at the arsenal, it's there. I think the fastball is really good pitch. It plays much better than you would think. And he's getting good results on it this year. He's missing more bats than he did last year on it. He's up the splitter usage significantly from last year. And that's been a huge whiff pitch for him as well. 36% whiff, missed bats with the cutter. It's a lethal cutter at 91. And then he'll dial it back and drop in a curveball on you. While he has three pitches in the 90s, he'll dial it all the way back to the upper 70s with that curveball and can really do some damage with it too. So, yeah, I think Bradley's an exciting one to buy into. And obviously it's a buy high at this point with how good he's been. But, yeah, I certainly want this guy on my roster if I can.
Absolutely. So, yeah, let's end out on that positive note and call that a show. Thank you to everyone for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms. Check out all the great things going on over at RotoBaller. And we will be back with you again on Monday. But until then, everyone take care.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.